Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family. Welcome back to the Family Room Podcast. I'm Peter Squires, back from 3 months of traveling and 2 months of getting back up and running. It feels good to be home. My guest on this episode is Kenley Darling. Kenley is a multidisciplinary artist and the secret mastermind behind the Good Luck Postcards Project. Kenley and I discussed breathing, living with intention, getting what you deserve, homeschooling, the purpose of art, and secret identities, among other things. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Hi, Kenley.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What have you been doing?
Today or recently?
All the above.
All the above. Okay. Lately I've been just trying to take a breath a little bit, I would say. I've been pretty busy this year. So since kind of the beginning of May, I've just trying to kind of refocus, I think artistically and life-wise, take a breath for a minute.
Yeah. How have you been doing that?
That's a good question. I've been trying to get into a good daily routine. Do you have a good daily routine?
No, not at all. What's yours? What are you trying for yours to be?
I would say, as of just recently, I've been trying to take 15 minutes in the morning to just breathe.
Awesome.
15 minutes, which is like no time out of your day. And I can't tell you how difficult I'm finding it.
Yeah.
So
you're trying
that.
To do it in like a meditative way or in a yoga way or just.
Yeah,
like-
I guess I was actually just talking to a friend recently about just the word, you know, meditation. I don't know because I'm not, you know, using that word, you know, what that other people think about that or what that means to them.
Yeah.
When you say that. But for me, honestly, I think that if just even taking that, the words out of it and just breathing, which I guess that is what that is.
Right.
But, there's no, like just being in, out, you know, and having my thoughts come in, let them go.
Yeah.
Because it changes how I go through the rest of my day when I can do that.
Totally.
And it's always better.
Yeah. There's so much of my routine that I do have is just focused on like mindless input, you know, rather than just being with my own thoughts or being with my own surroundings. I wake up in the morning and I stumble downstairs and then I immediately start looking at my phone or watching TV or checking my email or whatever. And not for any positive outcome.
Right. You know? Habit.
Yeah.
It's habit. It's something to do.
I need something.
Yeah.
Something going in, you know, right. But I don't.
Right. You know? You don't.
Yeah.
But I'm the same way. And it's like trying to, I go in, waves of it, I guess, where I can be really good about taking that time in the morning, breathing, giving myself some time. And then I'll get off of that. And I'll get back into, you know, checking my phone, like you said, looking at emails, putting on music or just doing something right away. I used to live with someone a while ago, my roommate, and sometimes we didn't have, this was before kind of computers in the house and before cell phones and we had a television, but we didn't have cable. So there wasn't a lot of like that kind of distraction in the house. And, in the morning she would just come downstairs and, you know, I'd just be drinking my tea or something by the window and she'd go, "Oh, morning think," you know, and I'd be like, "Oh yeah, I'm in it today," you know, 'cause I'd just be sitting in the chair for like 20 minutes, just kind of looking out the window and looking at my day.
Yeah.
Thinking about either the night before. I mean, I wasn't trying to like breathe and kind of let go of things. I was just taking my time in the morning to wake up before I went forward.
Right.
And now with, you know, with the phone and all the things that are easy to take up time like that, it's harder to do.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like, I feel like in the olden days, as in like everything before like the last, you know, 15 years, but really probably just sort of like before broadcast media. Mm-hmm. There was a distinction between doing something and not doing something, you know, or like doing something and just kind of having a think, like you said,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Whereas just as you were saying that, what I was thinking of was, the things that I have to get done over the course of most days are like sending emails, replying to emails, paying bills, like
maybe the grocery store, maybe.
Yeah. But so much of it is just like sitting in front of a screen.
Oh yeah.
And that's also where the like putzing around not productive time is also mm-hmm. spent. And so you can lose sight of a whole day, like with the getting stuff done and the getting nothing done completely interspersed.
Right. They get lost in each other.
Yeah. Almost. And it's like hard to even tell where one begins and the other ends. Whereas it's like when you actually had a concrete to-do list of things and then you also have time for a sit.
Right.
That's like, it's almost like that's a part of the to-do list. Whereas now it's just sort of like this gray in between where everything is happening in your eyeballs all the time.
Yeah. And there's a lot, when you're doing those things, there's a lot coming in. Mm. There's like a, I think that, I don't know if we always think about it that way, but it's a lot of stimulation, you know, through the things that things are coming at you fast, things are scrolling, you know, colors, words, like everything's happening so fast that there's not even, so even when you're taking that stuff in, especially first thing in the morning, but anytime through the day, not only are those things kind of intertwined and it's work and it's also could be not distraction, but you just get lost in other things, but then it's happening so fast. So by the end of it, your day, you're like tired from, people say they're tired from looking at the screen, you know, which at first you think, well, why would you be tired? You're sitting there just looking at something, but you've actually taken in so much information, just processing it. It's tiring.
Yeah. Or even super just tiring. Like half, you know, not even all the information, you know, like I didn't learn anything today, but I read a lot of headlines.
Yeah, I do that.
And I also think the good thing about your waking up and breathing is that it kind of gives you the opportunity to kind of like negate the side of the bed you woke up on.
Yeah.
You know, like if you just like had bad dreams or you woke up feeling anxious or whatever, that it kind of gives, it's a little kind of opportunity to take control of like a fresh start for the day.
Yeah. I mean, I really think you're kind of touching base with you mm-hmm. when you do that, even if you're aware, because different mornings, you know, different things will kind of pop into my head while I'm just trying to kind of let go of things. And I try to be aware of what those things are in the morning, you know, mm-hmm. like you said, you were kind of checking in on, you know, which side of the bed you woke up on. It's like, oh, where am I today?
Right.
How am I feeling today? What are the thoughts that are coming through my head today? And how can I move forward as a good person today?
Yeah.
You know, which I think is really important.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not something that you can do without being intentional.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny in intention. I was thinking about that recently about how, or I guess I was, you know, what does it mean to be an artist or like, what does it mean to be, to have intention? Mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. Sometimes, with the artwork that I make, even the, you know, the big, color wheels that I had made for that show, mm-hmm. we had talked about, I think when I ran into you about the pennies, like throwing the pennies in the middle, I was throwing pennies in the middle and the good luck penny was determining the center. That was intent. That's intention.
Yeah.
Right there that you can't see when you look at it, but there's something intentional in that. And, when you are an artist, a musician, or just making anything, you're paying attention to kind of smaller details and you're doing things with intention. And, I think you can live with intention too.
Yeah.
Like daily, like as not as an artist or just as a person, like if you take that 15 minutes or go through your day, you know, how am I walking through my day today? What's my intention with my day? Am I going to try to make people's days better when I see them? You know, what am I trying to do today?
Yeah. Or even just the act of considering at all the effect that you have on the people around right. you. You know what I mean? I feel like it's so easy not to do that. And it's almost like I've been thinking about this lately. Like, is it a tenet of our society specifically, or is it a human thing to sort of like avoid seeing the effect that you have on other people? And I don't know, I've been thinking about sort of like the American-ness of like not seeing how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like not thinking about where our stuff is made, mm-hmm. not thinking about, you know, I was thinking about it with regard to meat. Like, I am a meat eater, but it's like definitely a part of my meat eating is that not thinking
about
it.
You don't think about it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's easy for us and in some ways even encouraged to not think about the impact that your actions have on other people. So just the act of waking up and being like, am I going to be kind today? Am I going to like influence other people positively and, you know, affect myself positively? Like, that's more than many of us do. And that's not because we're all jerks. It's because it's like built into the way we operate.
Not programmed.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't done a lot of traveling outside of the US. So a lot of like my experience with that is completely like that from, you know, growing up here, living here.
Yeah.
But I know that's the way it is here, you know, that people find themselves or think about themselves very separate. Everyone thinks that they're like separate from everybody else. Mm. So, but we're all together.
Yeah.
Like, it's all connected. We're connected. People are connected. Everything is connected. Like you said, I'm a vegetarian. But I stopped eating meat like as an adult. Like, I wasn't like, I haven't like, you know, been a vegetarian my whole life. And, I was like 34 or 35 when I became a vegetarian. Hmm. And I think it was also that during that time period where I actually really started focusing more on how I was connected.
Yeah.
How am I connecting to the world around me? And how am I connecting to myself and what do I want to do? What choices do I want to make?
Yeah.
And I made that decision to stop eating meat then. But I think that even if you don't make that decision, even if people just, you know, cut things down,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's like, don't beat yourself up for not being the best at something and then feel guilty and then just feel like you can't do anything.
Right.
Like that's a silly cycle. We don't want to, you know, and we all get caught in it.
Totally. The why bother syndrome.
Right.
You know?
That is. And that was, I think that was me for a number of years. Like, I think I even felt, you know, early on, like, oh, I should probably stop eating meat. I know that's the right thing to do, but I'm not going to do it. And then like, in not doing it, I would be like, just consuming it, like knowing I shouldn't. I don't know. It was like just a weird thing. But even if I think if at that point, if I had said, you know, hey, it's okay if you just eat instead of, you know, three times a day, one time a day, or if you eat it one time a day, one time a week, or like if you just cut down, I don't know. It's the same with consuming anything though.
Yeah. I've just been thinking more, and I don't know if it has to do with leaving the US, which I hadn't really done before either.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause how long were you gone for?
3 months.
Okay.
And it was definitely like, I don't know, I guess in Thailand, my perspective changed on like where things come from. Cause mm-hmm. it seemed way more there. Like everything we were eating was from there, mm-hmm. you know? And that's just like, well, yeah, that's where we get it.
Right,
you know,
right.
It wasn't some big ideological thing. It was just like, we have fish here, so we're going to eat the fish that we have here. And then sort of the opposite, like being in Egypt where you cannot drink the water and everyone drinks bottled water.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, like, where is this all coming from? And how is it that this guy can sell me a huge bottle of water for 5 Egyptian pounds, which is like, I don't know, 15 cents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And still make a profit. But we pay, you know, X much more for it. And like, is it the same water? Like
you just started asking questions.
Why?
Yeah.
So, and those questions just reveal, if anything, how much we
can not think about any of those things.
Yeah.
You know, and just wanting to start to do that.
Well, I think it's like, I mean, I hate to use the word, I feel like I keep using the word connected, but it's all connected. If we are connected to what we're doing to ourselves on the inside, and then what we're, how we're treating other people, the people next to us, how we are, you know, as a group of people treating other groups of people, you know, all of that relates. And I think probably you going outside of, you know, your normal day experience and traveling, that's going to, you're being exposed to so many new things that are asking those questions.
Yeah.
So how do you think that has changed you now? How does, do you want to make any changes, or are you, how are you feeling?
Well, that's been the interesting thing. Like, I definitely came back and was like, wow, I'm going to see the whole world differently now. Like it does just get you asking questions that you didn't ask before. And then questions just necessarily beget more questions, because mm-hmm. there's just so much more to understand than any of us possibly can.
Yeah.
But I was surprised and a little disappointed in how quickly I started falling back into my routines from before we left for the trip.
Yeah.
Where just like bad habits just like immediately coming back, and like just kind of acting like I hadn't left at all, in the sense of like,
why do you
mindlessly
think that is?
Going through.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
But. No, I don't know. And I think that the thing that I want to take away from it is continuing to be intentional and continuing to ask questions. And one of those questions is being like, why am I like, for instance, buying Oreos at the gas station on my way home? You know what I mean? Like, I shouldn't do that. Yeah. And like, you know, that's just like an example of like an unhealthy thing that I'm doing that I got out of the habit of doing. And as soon as I got back, I started doing it. And again, it was just like, shit. Like, why? You know? Because they say it takes,
It's because it's easy, and because we are disconnected. I mean,
but isn't it easier for me to keep driving?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe it's temptation. Yeah. I don't know what, or is it something like you knew you're trying to do the wrong thing? I don't know what it is.
Well, that's my fear, is that I'm like being intentionally self-destructive in some subconscious way. And like, why? I guess the question that I'm continuing to sort of want to look into is like, what on the deepest level am I hoping to accomplish with these Oreos or whatever,
right?
You know? And like, and how do I, and why is that, where is that coming from, and how can I like better address what my body and my mind is actually asking me for?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, well, yeah. I wonder that, you know, about like, when I do things that I know I shouldn't do, or should it, right. And I shouldn't do, or things that are unhealthy, let's say making an unhealthy decision, and I do it anyway.
Right.
And then when I say to myself, you know, why am I doing that?
Yeah.
It usually for me, it comes down to, I think it comes down to even, I want to say like childhood stuff, right?
Totally.
Like it's like parents, it's like, like you shouldn't be doing, like trying to get away with something. Mm-hmm. Like I think there's definitely part of that. That's in us, like as adults, we're still kind of like little kids inside.
I'm the boss of me.
Yeah, right.
You can't
can
tell
what
me
I
not
want.
To. Yeah, and it's almost like the conscience voice that is saying what you should and shouldn't do is the voice of authority that you're defying.
Yeah, that's the parent, or even, which is even just the person who's telling you to make a good, healthy decision.
Right.
But you still want to defy that sometimes or do the wrong thing. I remember telling my mom at one point, as a kid, that when I moved out of the house, she wouldn't let me eat cookie dough. I always wanted to eat the cookie dough. Like when we ate the cookies, and she didn't want me to eat the cookie dough. And I was like, when I move out of the house, I'm going to eat cookie dough every day for lunch. Like every day. That was like, you know, and still like, I leave, like when I make cookies, I leave way too much of the batter. I eat a lot of it. And I think to myself, like, you don't even want all this right now. Why are you eating this? And it's still that like 8-year old. I'm going to eat that cookie dough. So whether it's that or eating or, even exercise, like I feel great when I'm a swimmer, mm-hmm. I swim a lot.
Cool.
And, some like a, like everything else. Sometimes I'm doing really well swimming a lot. Sometimes I fall off of that. But when I'm in that swimming, I couldn't be more excited to like go swimming. Like I'll wake up and be like, oh, I got to go today, you know? But then like right now I haven't been swimming lately. And I play this weird game with my, like I come up with anything to do rather than go swimming, even though I know if I go, I'll feel better. Mm-hmm. I'll be doing myself a favor, you know, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And there's no way I'm going to regret that decision.
Yeah.
And I still will like be like, well, I have to, I don't know, clean this thing, right? Answer an email, yeah, get lost on the computer, right?
Anything.
All those things, anything, yeah, to not do it.
Yeah.
But that's
or like
another
all
game.
Of a sudden you're like, yeah, I guess my like elbow hurts a little.
yeah.
I have the exact same
my
thing about going to the gym.
Right.
Yeah. Or like all of a sudden I'm really tired or all of a sudden I have a headache.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely have that about exercise where when I'm doing it, I feel great and I'm so glad that I did it,
yep,
but I never feel like going. And I used to call it the jazz band syndrome when I was in college. So growing up, my first instrument was the trombone.
Okay.
And I used to like play in, you know, orchestra and marching band and,
yeah,
jazz band.
My son
like
plays
this
in marching band.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then when I was in college, I was in the jazz band. And it was just like, I guess college specifically because you have to make your own decisions about what you feel like doing at any given moment. Whereas when you're in high school, it's just like, this is what time jazz band rehearsal is. And, mm-hmm, your parents are going to drive you there and all that stuff. And it's like, you're just not even thinking about not wanting to.
Because you just have to.
Yeah. It's just, this is my schedule.
Yeah.
And in college it started being like, oh, this is an optional activity that I'm choosing to do. So I just never felt like going,
mm-hmm,
but then I would get there and I would have a great time,
mm-hmm,
you know? And I didn't really understand why I didn't feel like going. And I still don't understand why I didn't feel like going. But it's like the first example I can think of that was this like recurring thing that happened in my life. So,
yeah,
now whenever I don't feel like doing a
That's
thing that I enjoy
syndrome.
Doing, it's jazz band. Yeah, but with working out, it makes even less sense because you actually like get an endorphin rush,
right,
and it's so just like fundamentally good for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That it's like, What is that? Like, why is there a voice in there that's discouraging you from doing that?
From making good, healthy decisions for yourself. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I wonder, do I think I deserve, what do I think I deserve as a person? Do I deserve good things? And I don't, I feel like now as I get older, I feel more and more like I deserve good things. So I really do. Like, I think that took me some, but I didn't. That wasn't in me right away.
Yeah.
So making healthy decisions, like I was probably making unhealthy decisions because I didn't even think that I would not deserve. I think it is the right word.
No,
I really think I deserved
that.
Like, good things. And
yeah,
then as you get older, I'm like, oh, like forgive yourself for things. Don't be so, you know, don't beat yourself up over things, you know, let things go. And then I think I do deserve good things. Everyone I know deserves good things. You know, I try not to talk to myself the way I wouldn't talk, or I would talk to someone else, right? Like I would never say to someone, you know, you don't deserve feeling good. So why would I say that to myself?
Right.
You know,
that is a very, very interesting thought. And I think that is like a very common issue. People being, limited by what somewhere deep inside they think they do or don't deserve.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to like, I want to think about that a lot more.
Okay.
I'm like really glad that you brought that
yeah,
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
What other than just sort of like growing older, what do you think prompted that change for you?
Well, I actually think, I don't know where to start on that, I guess. Well, I got myself, I think, into some trouble kind of early on in my life making unhealthy decisions. And I think after getting out of those situations, I had to look back and say, how did I get into those? Why did I make those decisions? How did I get into that kind of bad space? And in looking back at that, I realized that I was, and being a kind of self or more aware of what I was saying to myself, I was aware that I was telling myself I didn't deserve good things. I mean, I was just seeing that. And so I think it started kind of early on, but I still beat myself up in my head. I'm a self talker. I don't know if you are, how that works for you, but I will talk to myself a lot. And sometimes I say like mean things to myself, you know, like, why did you do that? You know, you're so stupid. Like I'll say that to myself, and then I'll hear myself say that and then go, whoa, like you're not stupid. Why are you, you know, why are you telling yourself you're stupid?
Yeah.
And then why? I'm aware that I do that, and I've been aware of that since, I think, for a little while now.
Yeah.
So I try to tell myself to make good decisions, because I deserve them.
Yeah. My wife and I had a conversation recently where she was talking about feeling like self-judgmental.
Yeah.
And like that there's this judgmental version of herself talking to like the other version of herself.
Totally.
And I'm like, well, like, your husband is telling the judgmental version of yourself not to be so mean to the other version because he's married to her. And
yeah.
They're like, yeah,
that's
don't
a good
be,
husband.
Don't be mean to my wife.
Yeah, that's a good husband. Yeah.
Yeah. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Haverhill, Massachusetts, or I was born in Haverhill and kind of lived in the Merrimack Valley area, northeastern Massachusetts. Went to high school in Framingham. I moved out to Utah when I was about 20.
Yeah.
I lived out there for 4 or 5 years, and then I came here to Portsmouth.
Wow.
Yeah.
What prompted you to leave and then to come back?
I was actually, I was married pretty young. I had my son pretty young. I was married pretty young, around 20. And my husband at the time, his job offered like a promotion for us to move out to Salt Lake City. So we ended up just moving out there. So we were going to just have this life. We were going to buy a house, and we did all that when we moved out to Salt Lake. And then those things kind of fell apart. And so I came back home to be with my family. So that's why I ended up here in Portsmouth.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you've just been mostly in this area.
Yeah.
Other than the Salt
brief
Lake
stay
experiment.
In Salt Lake. Yeah. Salt Lake was pretty awesome though. I do miss it sometimes. I love that whole area. I like, you know, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, that whole area. I tend to, if I take vacation, I usually go back out to that area.
Yeah. I haven't spent much time out there. I did like a big tour / road trip in like 2009, 2010. And I was in New Mexico and like the very southern part of Colorado, but yeah. I've never been to Utah. I've never been to Nevada. There's definitely like a lot of beautiful national parks and stuff out there that I've never been to and I really want to.
We do. That's actually part of the reason why I feel like I never get to travel outside the U.S. Is because every time we can take a vacation or we take a vacation, we end up going to a different national park or something like that. I've been to quite a few. Arches National Park in Utah was one of my favorite places I've ever been. I tend to like the desert.
Mm.
I just went out to Joshua Tree National Park a couple months ago too. That was really beautiful. I like that whole area.
I had previously had the same attitude. Like there's so much to see in our country that I still haven't seen most of it, even though I've traveled in the country kind of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, well, I've got to tackle all that stuff first, you know, but I think they're such different experiences, you know, like being exposed to natural things that you never get to see scratches a specific kind of like human itch.
Yeah.
But I'm also now understand, having done it, that like being experiencing cultural things that you've never seen before scratches a different kind of itch. But I think that the outcome is probably the same in terms of the like it seeing things you haven't seen before causes you to ask questions, and that's good.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, coming back from being abroad now makes me want to do that again in the country, you know, like see more of the country and understand it better.
Do you have a specific place that you want to see or places that you want to see? Or
I guess, I don't know what they all are, but I've never been to Arches. I've never mm-hmm. been to Joshua Tree. Like, I've never been to most of the national park. So those yeah. pretty much. And then as far as like experiencing different cultures within our country, it's like, well, like I want to go to New Orleans, you know, I've right. been to New Orleans, but it's just like, where are the places in our country that are like culturally unique, you know? And that's probably the most unique. I mean, there are no degrees of uniqueness, but that,
yeah, it's
that
hard
is
because
probably,
I mean, as things grow, like we're like, you know, sometimes like if you can find a McDonald's everywhere, like yeah. it's kind of the same, totally. But at the same time, like everyone has a slightly different accent. So there's like these small little things yeah. that make us all kind of different in our little areas, yet some things that, you know, keep us all kind of the same too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that was actually a funny part about traveling too, is like, they literally have McDonald's everywhere. They have 7-Eleven, like where you wouldn't
really?
Believe that there's just 7-Elevens everywhere. Yeah. And like, it's 7-Eleven in Thailand. They serve Thai food, you know, and yeah, it's just yeah. like, but there it is. But they obviously feel a lot different, you know? So yeah, I don't know. I guess I just like keep wanting to see more, here, there, and everywhere in between.
I mean, I feel like traveling is, it's just the best feeling. Mm. I homeschooled my son throughout June while he was in junior high. And so during that time period, we could travel a lot, just the two of us, and go to different places. And, because we didn't have to worry about school or time constraints, and it was educational, you
yeah.
know, to go to the Grand Canyon.
It's like the most educational.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so I have been able to do quite a bit of traveling in the US, and, every time I'm just like, it is so good. It feels so good. I love it. I just want more of it. Mm. You know, for every place we go that I say, okay, I've gone, I've seen this thing, there's like five more places I want to add to my
totally.
List of things to see. Cause yeah. I'm like, this is the best. Traveling just really is the best. Even when you're just seeing like a squirrel sometimes, you know, that's like, that doesn't look anything like the squirrel at my house. It's a totally different squirrel.
Yeah. We drove up to Montreal a couple of days ago mm-hmm. because it was like, hey, like, you don't have to get on a zillion hour plane ride
yeah.
in order to visit a foreign country. You can literally drive there
yeah.
in the same amount of time it takes to get to New York, you know, and it feels really different. You know, they speak mm-hmm. a different language. And my favorite, I had been to Montreal before, and this was, I saw this road sign that the first time I drove to Montreal, I saw it and I was like, that's amazing and hilarious. And then when I saw it again, like 15 years later, I was like, yes, it's still there. So it's basically the sign is communicating the fact that it's windy and the wind may blow your car around.
Okay.
So to illustrate this, there's like a picture of the road with like arrows on it. And then there's this big, like what I can only call a God face, like a face in a cloud, just making this big, like,
does it look
like,
angry?
Puffed out,
does it
cheeks
look scary?
Glowing
or?
Face. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Like, Zeus is mad today and he's going to blow your car around. I was like, wow. I totally, like, it got the point across. I totally know what it means, but we do not have that in America.
No, definitely you know? Not.
But yeah, that you can just like take a 5-hour car ride. And we went for one night, you know, and it felt like going to another country, you know.
Yeah.
There are things about it that are not different at all. And there are things about it that are different enough that it gets your mind in that sort of like inquisitive mm-hmm. place that is what feels so good about it.
And I think that getting, I think why actually getting in a good daily routine is important has to do with some of that, is because, when you, patterns are so easily formed that when you travel, you get out of those patterns mm-hmm. and that's what helps you ask questions.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, forming bad patterns is the last thing I want to do.
Yeah.
It really is.
What was homeschooling like?
It was great. I miss it actually now. Yeah. My son loves the Portsmouth High School. He goes to Portsmouth High. He likes it there, and I'm glad he likes it there, mm-hmm. but I definitely miss the time. I miss the time.
Yeah.
That we had, because it was nice to, kind of be learning together, and to be able to, just, I don't know, most kids, you go to school all day and then you come home and everyone's so tired and you have dinner, homework, bed, and that's it. But with homeschooling, you have all day and you can take your time with things. Mm. And, it was just really a great time period.
Was like the subject matter that you needed to teach dictated to you by anything, or was
no?
It,
yeah. Actually, I could come up with the curriculum on my own. It was just at the end of the year, there are tests that the kids take, and if they pass and they do well, then they say that whatever you did was good,
yeah,
and you can move forward. So as long as he was passing his tests, which we were fine with whatever the curriculum was. We did use some like computer based learning, like Keystone was the program. It's online classes for kids, for English and things like that. We used some of those programs, but then we could do whatever we want. We actually started listening to like podcasts and like Radio Lab, and like using that as part of kind of our curriculum, or just our way to kind of, you know, talk about the world with each other, which is great because my son still loves podcasts now, and they're a great educational tool.
Totally. I've been thinking about like with how expensive college is now, and that, like, I don't know, I went to college and I got a bachelor's degree, and like, I don't feel like very much of my after college experience was really influenced at all by the fact that I went to college. You know, for people, like, I just went to a liberal arts school, you know,
sure.
But for, if you're not like studying engineering or pre-med or something like that, then like, you're just supposed to kind of like go someplace and learn for 4 years. But like, you do not have to spend a gazillion dollars to learn stuff, especially now with just like how common, you know, books and audiobooks and TED Talks, and like you can hear lectures from like super smart, eye-opening people on different subjects for free all the time. That it's like, I wonder if people will just start saying like, that's, it's not worth
we
it.
We don't need to do
it's
it.
It's not
yeah.
worth it to hear that, you know, like we can to be homeschooled, like once the sort of like fundamental, like math and English and history learning is done, that you can kind of like dig in on the rest of the stuff on your own. It's just kind of a question of like having a curriculum.
So it's funny because I went to school at a school in Framingham, Mass called Sudbury Valley School, which is considered, I think they call it a free school.
Mm-hmm.
But basically it was designed in 1968. It was no forced curriculum. There were only 200 students ages 4 through 19. So my graduating class was 11 people.
Wow.
And they didn't believe in, like if the student wasn't expressing a desire to learn something, they weren't teaching it. But as soon as they did express that desire, they would help them learn. So people like, I think, you know, 60 Minutes and things like that would do specials on the school, 'cause it was supposed to be the most radical school in the US. And, it's funny because so I went to high school there. I went to traditional elementary school, but there they really do. You have the power to learn anything you want. And when I first started going there, I was kind of an angry teenager in some ways.
Yeah.
Going back to that, making bad decisions, right? I was kind of angry at kind of everything. I was like angry at school. I was angry at the system. I was angry at a lot of things. And I kind of forgot about learning. Like I like to learn things.
Yeah.
I'm a person who likes to learn things.
Yeah.
But I was angry at school for making me. It became about that instead of, you know, the fact that I actually want to learn about science, you know?
Yeah.
So I ended up, I ended up going to the free school. And when I first got there, some of the teachers that were there were kind of asking me those questions, like, why are you so angry? Like, what do you want to learn about?
Yeah.
And I hadn't asked myself that question ever. Well, what do I want to learn about? Well, I don't know. Like, I know I don't want to learn what I have to learn about, you know, yeah, that's pretty much totally. The answer, but I didn't, oh wait, I can learn about anything. And that's actually where, I started taking like photography classes and pottery classes and I don't know, jewelry making and watercolor. And I started exploring art and, things like that at that school because no one was making me
yeah.
do anything. They were saying, you know, we believe in you. Mm. We believe the choices you make are going to be good for you. So what choices are you going to make?
Yeah.
And having that freedom and having someone who did believe in me and, that really changed the way that I viewed education and the way I viewed, you know, my own life where I really did, it was instilled in me during that time period that anyone, any age, if you want to do something or if you want to learn about something, you can. And that was even before the internet. That was before you could look up a YouTube video on how to do it. Totally. So that was like, even back then, you know, yeah. I still believed that I could go, you know, figure out how to do things. So now, I mean, things are much easier.
Yeah. No, and that's so important. Like whether you go to a radical school or not, just that like, angsty teenagers, any teenagers are given the opportunity to like, to direct that energy in a positive direction.
Yeah.
You know, that like, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. You know, rather than just like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Right. I don't want to do anything. They're like, eventually it's like, what if you could do anything? Like
yeah.
what,
right.
What would you be doing? Okay. Like we think that's an awesome idea. Now give it a try. And like, and now you remain an artist and that yeah. probably that seed was planted there. I'm
definitely.
Yeah.
I would say so. Definitely. I mean, I always had a tendency to, like draw and sketch. Actually, before I went to, that school, I had, while I was in a history class and I took all my notes by like drawing I drew pictures instead of like writing my notes as words. And my teacher was like, how are you ever going to remember that? And I was like, I don't know. That's how I see it. And she was like, you're going to have to rewrite your notes. And I remember being so upset that I had to like rewrite my notes and, you know, I don't know what I don't even remember fully now if I even did that, but I remember that whole thing going on. And then when I went to this school, just being like, oh, if that's the way you do things, like they were just accepting of people, even if they were different. Mm. And, I had never experienced that before.
Yeah.
I think I had been labeled like as different or thought of as like weird in some way, I guess. And, when I was at a place where I wasn't that anymore, where I was just, it didn't matter what I did. We were all just friends anyway.
Yeah.
When I was being treated with respect and you know, those things, I could really kind of, you know, figure out who I was, what I wanted to do.
That also provides a pretty direct explanation for why you might've felt so angry. You know, if right? people are just like telling you you're different and weird.
Yeah.
For no reason or like for a reason that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Or taking that in and saying, well, am I, you know, well, I don't think I am, but then, you know, then maybe that's part of where questioning that comes from too.
Yeah. And for how long can you be told that without having some reaction that's either like self judgment or self hating or like, oh God, like, why am I so different? Like, why do I suck? Or lashing out. Like,
right.
You know, well, like, fuck you and fuck everybody for saying that, you know? And like, if I'm different and I'm weird, well then like, what choice do I have? But to, you know, if I'm backed into a corner, then to sort of like fight my way out and that's how you see your place in life. Whereas I guess like, how long did you feel like it took once you got to a place where you weren't being treated that way before you sort of started internalizing the feeling of like, okay, I can be comfortable.
I think it took me a little while actually, because I think there was a period of healing kind of that had to go on too. Like there was like some scars that were, I think kind of made from just being, you know, growing up in that system, that I think it was like this safe place. I felt like that school for me very much was like a safe place where, I think the first even year I was there, I didn't do a lot of things. I didn't actually participate in a lot of classes and things like that because I was just kind of like getting rid of these ideas that I had formed in, you know, traditional school.
Yeah.
In an institution like that, because not everyone's made to be in that system. I was definitely not made to be in that system. Some yeah. people flourish in that system, and that's great.
Yeah.
I just wasn't one of those people. And so it took me, I think it kind of started destroying me in some yeah. ways. So I think I had to like heal from that, and then I could kind of move forward from a different place.
Yeah. I remember when I was in college. Oh, look, I remember something from college. I was initially studying education, and one of the things that stuck with me was the idea of multiple intelligences. Mm-hmm. That, like, Michael Jordan is a genius at basketball.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like, that doesn't, whether or not he's, like, registered as a genius based on his IQ or based on his ability to, like, write a book or solve a math equation, like, he is a genius at basketball. And, like, that should be celebrated.
Yeah.
Like, look how amazing you are at this thing.
Yeah.
How awesome is that, you know? And that, like, so many people could be so amazing at something, and that we should be looking for the things they're amazing at and encouraging
exactly.
them rather than focusing on the things that they aren't, or saying like, these are the only things that are important and
right.
these are the only things we're going to measure you on.
It sounds silly, but the term like well-rounded, like I never really liked that term. I still don't like it because I think that well-rounded almost just means like, we're all just like kind of the same.
Yeah.
Like we're all just have this basic general sameness.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I really believe that when someone is good at something, I think sometimes the way that things are run, that, you know, if someone's good at one thing and they're not great at the other thing, they focus on the thing they're not great on, like to trying to make it better.
Yeah.
Where I feel like it should be like, oh, you know, we should focus on this thing that you're great at and
yeah.
that you love, and let's make that better.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, where you'll flourish. That's how you'll, because it's great to have lots of different people who are really great at different things. And then when they work together, they can all bring out their strengths,
yeah.
you know, instead of kind of just having everyone, I don't know, well-rounded.
Yeah. Yeah. Well-rounded sort of cogs in the, I don't know, want to sound like angsty, old
guy. It's all coming back.
We're all just cogs in the machine. No, but also, and I think that fostering the love of that thing is also really important, because otherwise you get the, like, you know, the like black swan thing, you know, where it's just like, you are nothing. You
yeah.
are only this thing that you're good at, you know?
Yeah.
But saying like, it's so awesome that you love this, like, that's the important part,
right.
you know? And like, and how cool that you're really good at it too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to find that balance, but I think being encouraged to do the things that you like, and that you liking them is the important part, is like so crucial.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, positive reinforcement, being encouraging in any way is always, always helpful for everyone. I mean, that's whether it be like as a parent or as a wife or a husband, or if you just say, oh, I love it when you do that. Oh,
yeah.
You're really great at that. Oh, thank you so much, you know, for this, like, being positive and encouraging. I mean, it always helps, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it hurts anybody.
No. So tell me more about yourself as an artist. Like, what's your sort of like artistic storyline?
Art, I've always been drawn to art, definitely. I tend to experiment with some different things, but I don't know. I don't know where to go with that. Say the question again.
Okay, so that's one of the things that I like about your art,
yeah.
is that you tend to experiment with different things,
yeah.
and that like you from the work of yours that I've seen, you don't seem to feel too beholden to a specific style or medium. And that's great. So like, where did that come from?
I'm not sure where that came from. I know that what I can tell, when I want to, when things feel right or when they don't feel right. And I, when they don't feel right, I don't like continuing to do them. Hmm. So if I am doing something and I'm like, you know, I can love it temporarily or love it for a period of time. And then even when I go back to it, or if I continue to do it and think, well, I want to try this other thing now, and I try this other thing and that feels good. Sometimes when I go back to the thing I've done before, I can just even tell right away. I'm like, this doesn't feel the way it did before. Hmm. I'm not feeling excited to do it. It feels more like an obligation. Hmm. Like, and it takes the part that I like out of the art, which is the enjoyment. I like enjoying my, I make art because I love it. I like the way it makes me feel. It gives me, an opportunity to say something, even if I'm saying nothing. I don't know if that makes any sense, but even if I'm not even making a point, it feels like I'm expressing myself in some way that I can't use my words. I can't, you know, even show someone, I guess. It just comes out through art, and that's my favorite part of it. And it's always felt like that. And I've always been attracted to it. Even I remember seeing, as a kid, and this was, Keith Haring. I saw was one of the first artists I ever saw, but just pictures of his artwork. And I was pretty young and I just like couldn't get enough of it. Mm. I wanted to see more and more of it. It was like so different to me. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And I really do think that at that moment, I remember like just like staring at those pictures for so long. I wanted to like do that. You know, whatever that was. Yeah. I didn't even want to make art like he makes art or anything like that. But I just, it something really resonated with me about seeing his art. And still to this day,
yeah.
I see murals he did, or even just if it's on a t-shirt, someone walks by and I'm like, solid. Like, I like that.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Keith Haring was great.
Yeah. He's someone who I feel like, I mean, I'm not like an expert in his work, but like when you say Keith Haring, like these specific images come to mind and it's almost like, oh wow, like that style is so recognizable that it, like, I wonder if like I like that your work, for instance, doesn't just call to mind one style, you mm-hmm. know, and it's like, I don't know, maybe everybody probably, you might like once you do something that like becomes successful on that level that you become a household name. Like it might be harder to
stray
in a completely different direction. Yeah. You know? I like the idea of like looking back on artists and like, oh, this was during their whatever period,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's like, oh yeah, they had periods,
right.
you know, or even like a musician like David Bowie, like this was during his Ziggy Stardust period. This was during his, you know, Thin White Duke period.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you feel like with the music that you make, do you feel like you tend to stick with like, how do you like to mix things up? Like how does that work for you?
I've been thinking about this a lot lately. The way it's always worked for me is that if I wanted to do something really different, I felt like I had to start a whole new band
mm-hmm.
where like, oh, the stuff that I release like under my own name as a singer songwriter sounds more or less like this. And the stuff that I do with this band sounds like this. And the stuff I used to do with that band sounds like this.
Yep.
And what I want to start to do is to release, to try very, very different things, but release them all under my own name.
Yeah.
And to like almost like embody different personas for a time, you know, like, so the example that sort of like got me into this idea was, a couple of years ago, I was part of this group called the Song Team where my friend Lizzie, sent out these like prompts every month where it was basically like every month we're going to write one song with according to a certain prompt. So like one month, the prompt was like, you're not allowed to use any stringed instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next prompt was, you know, write about your most embarrassing moment. And then one prompt was write a song as someone else, like invent a character.
Oh yeah.
And so I invented this joke as a joke. I invented this character who was a goth magician named Macabre Kadabra. And I wrote this song by Macabre Kadabra. And I love it. Like, it's probably one of my favorite songs I've ever written. And I just, like, fully went for it.
Yeah.
Because I was not myself. I was someone else. And this guy can sound as over-the-top ridiculously gothy. Just, like...
It gave you freedom.
It gave me total freedom. Yeah. And, like, I was thinking... So while we were traveling, I forget where we were, but I kind of like came up with another Macabre Kadabra song and I was like, whoa, I haven't thought about that in so long. Like, but now I have invented this joke artist that now has two songs. And then I was like, well, what if it doesn't have to be an alter ego? What if it can just be like, I put out an album called Macabre Kadabra. And on this album, I sing like a crazy weirdo and like, and then I'll play some shows with like a different look and a different onstage persona. And then, you know, thinking about it in terms of like intentionally trying very different things and committing to it, like going for it all the way rather than being like, oh, this feels weird, I don't want to do it.
Right.
But like, you know what? Well, get into it.
You know what? That's almost like traveling inside yourself.
Right.
Right? Like you said, like it's like a new persona to write from.
Yeah.
It's like a new place to be in. It
exactly.
like gives you a new space. So anytime you can give yourself that new space, I mean, that's awesome. What a great idea.
And to give yourself a reason not to say, I can't do that, you know, or I shouldn't do that, or I don't deserve to have a goth persona.
Yeah. Freedom. I mean, is that in you though somewhere? Is
yeah,
that, yeah, that's
obviously,
gotta be, right?
You know, it came out, you know, so like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's not like, oh, I want to be like a total jock dude, bro. Like that doesn't sound interesting to me, you know, but like,
but the goth magician was definitely that was
yeah that some like not because I feel like a goth magician, but because it clearly like it's an idea that was like it made me laugh really hard, but it also like prompted a different kind of creativity.
Yeah,
that like the outcome of which I liked. I surprised myself with how much I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, oh, I want to hear more from that guy.
Yeah, that's, you know, cool.
And you hear authors talk about that sometimes where like, I couldn't wait to see what the character would say next, you know, where it's like you invent these characters and then you really like spend so much time with them that they start to tell you what they're saying,
yeah.
You know? And I like the idea of that.
I do too.
Not having to go to great lengths to create a whole new thing to do that, but to just let yourself go there.
Mm-hmm. Freedom and forgiveness, right? To even treat yourself as like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
No matter what it is.
And that it's, and that prompt, that like inspiration is coming from an authentic place of like, this is what is making me giggle right now, or this is like what I've been thinking about right now, and not coming from a place of like, this is what I should do next, you know, or this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right. Or this is what people want me to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is something that I had where like, I made like an acoustic total like heartbreak breakup album and people really liked it because it came from the authenticity of it was very undeniable.
Right.
And so then when I made my next album, I like really didn't want it to be that. And there was some like heartbreak breakup sort of recovery stuff, but I also like really wanted it to be kind of like hopeful and bouncy and like, yeah, I'm back. You
That's
know?
How you were
and
feeling.
Like, it is how I was feeling, but I also was like pushing myself too hard in that direction.
Oh, okay.
Like I want to be that way, but I wasn't totally there yet.
Fair enough.
And I think it didn't resonate the same way because it wasn't as authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously like if I'm putting out an album as Macabre Kadabra, then that's not going to necessarily like resonate as authentic in the like subject matter, but I think I will be authentically feeling it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's the important part. Like, do what you are authentically feeling and don't get in the way of that.
Yeah. I have a hard, that's why also touching base with myself in the morning, that's important too, to say, where am I right now? Yeah. I have this project, my good luck postcard project that I've been working on. It's kind of this thing where, it's been actually like 4 years now where I make original postcards and I send them out to strangers in the mail, with like, messages of, it just says, may good luck find you on the back of the postcard. And, I don't write my name on it. There's no website or advertisement in it. So when the people receive it, there's no way for them to contact me or find me. It's just a message of good luck with some artwork on it. And that's coming to them for no reason. Right.
I love this.
So I've been doing it for 4 years now. June of 2013 is when I started, and I've sent out about 400 postcards so far.
How do you choose who you send them to?
Well, I go to antique stores, and I pick old postcards that I like, either the message on the back or the front, and say it'll have a name on it. It'll say like, you know, Jonathan Jones, from 1913.
Yeah.
I just type in Jonathan Jones to like the white pages, and I get the modern Jonathan Jones address, and I just send it to that address. Out in the mail.
It's so awesome.
Yeah.
But don't you want to, like, don't you want to see them get it? Like,
yes, I do. And the way that I had decided at one point that I was going to send out a letter 2 years later to the people I sent the postcards to. I've sent out like 48 letters just being like, oh, did you receive this postcard? I've had zero returns to did they get the postcard. So I've only had one person get in touch with me. I don't know. It's kind of a long story. I don't know if we have time to talk about it now, but I have had one person get in touch with me who received the postcards, I like the wondering though. I mean, I think that we have so many answers. Everyone has answers for everything, but I kind of like, as you know, this is going to sound kind of like creepy in some way. I go on Google Maps and I look at the house that I'm sending it to.
Yeah. Before I send it.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes there are people in the photos, or sometimes I know what kind of neighborhood they live in, or what their garden looks like outside their house. Or I kind of have these little kind of clues.
Yeah.
And I will like look at them, some of the addresses and kind of wonder, well, everyone needs a little luck all the time. So I think everyone needs it, but I wonder if they're, if things kind of look a little rough around the edges, are they in, do they need some help right now? Will they get this? And will it help? Will they think? At first, I wonder, I feel like most people are probably like, who sent this to me? Like, they'll call people or something. Like, was it my sister? And everyone's going to be like, nope, nope, nope. And then they're just left with, what is this? Why?
I mean, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that could send someone into, like, existential peril. Like, it'll probably only send them to a good place.
Is this
the long story? I want to hear it.
I'll try to say it quick. Basically, the one person who did get in touch with me was about a year into the project, and I got an email that said, like, oh, I saw some of your images online. I'm wondering if you sent me this postcard. I responded with, oh, my goodness, yes, I did send this postcard to you. And she responded, I'm very uncomfortable. I'm very uncomfortable with the way this made me feel. I feel like it was a violation of my privacy. She said that I used her born name, not her American name, and no one here knew it. And she asked me how I knew her personal information. How did I know it was her birthday? I didn't know it was her birthday.
Wow.
Which on my end kind of made me feel like, wow, this is really, like, I just sent this woman a good wishes on her birthday. How cool is that? But for her, she wasn't feeling that. She was basically like said that she had been in hiding from people and that she was incredibly uncomfortable with the fact that a stranger had found her. And she was even like saying, I mean, she got like, I'm going to contact a lawyer. Like it was very, she got very upset about it. And I had to explain back to her, like, oh, I'm just this artist living in New Hampshire. I was trying to wish you good luck. Like, I'm so sorry.
You have no idea how random this
was.
Yeah,
like, and that's what she said. I said, you know, I got your information from the White Pages. So if you are
in a situation,
you're not hiding very well. So, and then I thought, well, maybe that's good luck that maybe, you know, that I exposed that.
You exposed a flaw in the system.
Right. So maybe something bad would have happened if I didn't do that. Yeah. I don't know.
Or in fact, like, you were, in fact, so easy to find that, like, maybe this can bring you some comfort that whoever you're afraid is after you must not be. Because, right. Like, if they were, all they would have needed to do was Google.
Really? Google? I mean, no, you're a different name. Maybe she kept saying she went by a different name now. But, I mean, I don't know. But after that happened to me, I read that email and I definitely cried. Yeah. I was like, I said to my husband, I'm like, this wasn't my intention.
Yeah.
This was not my intention. Like, is this what I'm doing? Am I scaring people? Like, I don't want to scare anyone. That wasn't it. Maybe I should stop doing this. That was kind of, and I did, I kind of stopped doing it for like 2 or 3 months. And then thinking about it though, it made me more determined when I got back to it. I was like, no, I'm definitely doing this. And if everyone gets scared, right? This really nice thing I'm doing scares everyone. I think that says something more about, like, the culture we live in
and
who people are and how they're taking things and not what I'm actually trying to do.
There's definitely something about this weird conundrum regarding privacy, you know, where it's like my mailbox is MySpace and like my name is MySpace and like you're not invited.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, we put ourselves out there in so many ways, you know, that it's just like, where is that cutoff? Like, what is private and what is public, you know? And like, you know, like my Facebook wall, like that's mine. No, like you created a public version of your persona. Like you basically made a website for yourself and like, it's not private.
Right.
At all. It's not necessarily about what factually or legally is or isn't. It's how people feel.
Right.
And everyone is in a different place and has a different background and experiences and like relationship with their mailbox and their name and everything.
Yeah. And you never know, you know, and then, and even when we were having this email correspondence, afterwards, I felt weirdly like my privacy was violated in a weird way too. Like, I know that's really weird to say, but afterwards I was like, how did she find me? Like, I didn't think that anyone was going to be able to find me. And then I was thinking, I had a Blogspot at the time. I had this like other email address. I actually stopped doing the Blogspot and I like took all these images down offline because I was like, I don't want her. I don't want people to be able to find me. And so I was like going through these weird privacy things at the same time she was going through these weird privacy things. It was kind of this like,
it should have been much harder for her to find you than for you to find her.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's interesting.
So then we were both kind of feeling the same things in different ways about different things, but
yeah. And prompted by the opposite thing that you would expect.
Yeah, completely. Know? Completely.
Huh.
I mean, I do this project now. I still do it now. And, I hope that I've kind of changed things along the way. I think I'm going to send out some letters again next month. I would like to get some feedback from it, but I could do it forever and not get any feedback. And I still would be happy to do it. Honestly, it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, it would be amazing if there was just no way for them to get back in touch with you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I could see it both ways.
Yeah, I do it just to do it. Like, no one's, I mean, other than that one thing, you know, I've sent out 400 postcards. I've only had one reaction. Yeah. So I'm not looking for too much.
No.
But it would be nice to have, like, maybe, like, five stories. I don't know, just a couple people, I guess. But that's what makes it a project. And then also just, like, with the feedback, it kind of becomes more of a project. Without the feedback, it's just what I do.
Yeah. But, like, I guess the thing that just popped into my head right now is, like, this is why art is awesome, you know? Because every single person who gets that postcard is going to have a completely different reaction.
Yeah.
And it is an entirely a statement about them. And not about
exactly
the art.
Yeah.
My, I guess, geez, I guess she's my mother-in-law, was just telling me about an argument that she had with her father-in-law about art. And he, I guess, comes from like an advertising and marketing background. And mm-hmm. his basically argument was like, it's not art if it doesn't deliver a message. And it was like, well, who decides
yeah.
like what the message is? Like, do you mean like enjoy Coca-Cola, or do you mean like that you feel something? Because right. yes, I do think that's the goal of art, is that it is meant to make, to convey something, you know, or to make you feel something. Mm-hmm. But the artist does not get to decide what it makes you feel.
Right.
You know? And that, it's almost like the more random and anonymous it is, the better of a spectrum of reactions you're actually going
to
elicit.
It's funny because I tend to like things. I feel like when I was younger, I liked more art that said, like, I liked art that said something. Like, that was like, I liked it when it was like, this is saying something.
Yeah.
And as I get older and as my tastes change or as I grow, I like things that don't really say as much, but I like things that ask questions. Mm. I would rather have something ask a question than say something at this point. I think because I think that when something asks a question, it gives the viewer or the person listening or whatever we're talking about it gives that person the opportunity to come up with the answer, to decide what the message is for them. And I think that, that's important to me now, to kind of be more open. And I think art can definitely, doesn't have to say anything.
Yeah.
Now.
That there was that whole big thing that came up about the, there was a painting displayed, I think, that was like of, Emmett Till. And then there was this whole reaction from someone who was standing in front of the painting saying, like, you can't do this. And there was this whole big ongoing discussion about, like, sort of like the rights of the artist versus the rights of the audience and mm-hmm. like what's okay and what's not okay. And I guess my kind of takeaway from it was that, like, the artist can say whatever they want mm-hmm. and the audience can feel about it however they want. And
absolutely.
They both are right. Mm-hmm. You know, that, like, yes, I have the freedom to make this. And yes, this was my intention. And yes, fuck you for making this.
Yep.
And, like, you know, like that they're all right. And that's what art's for.
That, exactly. I couldn't agree more, actually. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, that's always like and artists are made to kind of push those boundaries a little mm-hmm. bit. So sometimes they are going to be pushed for different people in a direction that they don't, that's not acceptable or that's okay. But isn't it so great that we can do that?
Yeah. And that, like, kind of how amazing and, like, hilariously, ironically fitting is it that the one reaction you've gotten was from someone who yeah. did not want to get a postcard
yeah.
and who went out of their way to find you
yeah.
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of just perfect.
yeah. I would say so.
Okay. So I'm just going to do a quick, like, little short answer, lightning round
sure,
thing,
sure.
and then we'll
yeah.
call it a day. What's your happy place?
Silence.
Mm.
Anywhere I can, there's silence. Yeah. That would be my happy place. That could be like outside. That could be in the bathtub. That could be even, you know, going for a walk with a family member. But when it's quiet and silent, I say that would be my happy place. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What are you afraid of?
Climate change.
Hmm.
Yeah. Flooding, environmental issues.
Yeah. Totally.
Those cause a lot of fear in me.
What was the turning point in your life?
Turning point in my life probably happened. It's hard to say because every moment, you know, that is made is just all together forms where we are. So it's kind of they're all together there. But, I think there was a turning point, after my divorce, with my first husband and, becoming a single parent. And trying to also figure out what my role is with art, myself, in my world. Things changed a lot during that time period for me in a positive direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would your last meal be?
Pizza. Pizza.
Me too. Okay, last question. If you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
Get a massage. Can I say that?
Yes.
If I could have a 90-minute massage every day forever.
Yeah.
I'd love that.
That's a good life right there.
That's a good
and
life.
And in total silence.
Yeah, in silence. Then I think I'd be, that would be great. Yeah.
Sweet. Cool. This was a good one.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming
on. Yeah,
over.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter. My family.